noises. Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where an actual garbage man plays games 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every week, we randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play and then talk about. It's a wonderful excuse to play 20-year-old games in my spare time. We've got a very special show today with a guest from the community. Seek Ye Wisdom will be stopping by to discuss this week's game, which is a Sega Saturn exclusive. And I've never played Sega Saturn games before, so that's awesome. But before we get to all that, here's what's going on around the world of Super Garbage Day Incorporated. Backlog Eternal will have an episode coming out soon on Tecmo's Deception. That was the game chosen last month or this month, and I'm almost done with it, and I am ready to give a review on it. It's a PS1 interesting first person. I don't know how to describe it. It's very different, but that will be available on the Patreon. Also, Retro Deep Cuts will have an episode coming out soon called Last Meal Games, which asks the question, if you were sentenced to never play video games again, what would your last meal game be? They give you one weekend, you got one game to play. That's going to be an awesome episode as well. Also, the Super Garbage Bowl is still coming along. I apologize, it's taking this long. We're working on it. It's going to be fine. It's coming out within a week or two. So, other than that, let's congratulate our newest patron, which is Tabletops and Power Bottoms Podcast. Oh my God, I love that name. I'm assuming that's a real podcast, so please check out Tabletops and Power Bottoms. Our YouTube is going to have all the first plays of every game we talk about. So in the show notes, you will be able to put a face to a name because this is a podcast where we talk about games and you don't see it. So this way you can see that A, I played the game, and B, what it looks like. So check out the YouTube in the show notes as well. Now let's get to the retro question of the week. This one comes from Volpe, and they ask, what was your most frustrating moment of all time while playing retro games, and how did you react? Well, before I tell you my answer, let's go to the community because they actually answered this question as well. Van Fernal says, dying to the first form of the last boss on Ninja Gaiden and getting sent back 3 stages. I dropped the game for like 30 years. Yes, that kind of stuff always made me mad in these NES games. Anytime they you know what else did that? Mike Tyson's Punch Out. If you lost on that title fight, you got to go all the way back and fight those dudes. So, but it just makes you better. I think that's just the way the game just tightening up your skills. The Main Quest podcast, Keith, stated, most recently playing Nightmare Creatures, getting ganged up on by 2 enemies that force you into a corner with your back turned, which usually had me yelling about how tired I was of literally getting fucked in the ass. You know, that game is in the Patreon poll, so that's probably more than likely going to be an episode in the future if the wheel chooses. And Masked Keaton says, when I was 10 or so, I had rented Shatterhand for the NES. I'd gotten to the final boss. It was frustrating. My older cousin was in the room. He threatened to hit the power button. His finger hovered over the button, teasing me. Then he accidentally hit the button. I know it was an accident. He shouted, oh, sh**, and immediately started apologizing. I started rage crying and left the apartment. I was so furious. I walked to the local store and bought some Marvel trading cards and felt better. By the way, Mass Keaton, bro, I was obsessed with Marvel Universe Series 3 trading cards and Marvel Masterpieces, man. If you want to talk old school trading cards, oh, dude, I love those. Remember the foil ones that would come? I remember the hologram ones and the Marvel, not just the Marvel Masterpieces, but the Marvel Universe 3. Oh, anyways. Let's bring in our guest, a special guest this week, so they can also answer the retro question of the week. Everybody, here comes Seek Ye Wisdom! Be a part of the retro question of the week, which was the most, I mean, I'm kind of just throwing this at you, but the most frustrating moment of all time while playing a retro game?
Ooh, a specific retro game frustrating moment. There's a lot of those.
I know.
I mean, there's definitely way more frustrating retro moments that I'm probably going to be able to remember at this point. But in recent memory, I will say just playing Ghosts and Goblins, which is probably the most difficult retro game I've taken on in the last couple of years. Just getting stuck at level 3 for what seemed like literally weeks until I finally got through that gauntlet of all those red air mirrors and then got to the dragon. The dragon's pretty easy as long as you don't have the lance. If you have the lance and that's all you have, you get stuck. You have to choose fire, which is not easy to beat him with. If you get there with knives, you're golden. But I literally was streaming my entire process through that game, going from the first loop to the second loop. And people would come on a stream like, oh, you're playing Ghosts and Goblins again. Wait, weren't you on this level last stream? I mean, hours just stuck in level 3.
Yeah.
So that immediately springs to mind. What about you?
Yeah, that's... That, were you the one that put that in the Patreon pool?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I remember now. Now it's all making sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of those games that we played where I actually enjoy that game. Right. And Mr. Miller did not.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I remember that.
I think it's a classic. It's janky. But for me, honestly, it's Battletoads because I mean, it's because when you first play that game and you really seek out to beat it, mm-hmm. It's quite an undertaking, and because it's so different and it's obviously super difficult for me though, specifically in that game, it's the rat race level. It's like near the end. The last three levels are like treacherous for anybody who has a short fuse. So mm-hmm. rat race in particular took forever to get right. And even to this day, I still kind of struggle on that level, that and Clinger Winger, which follows it. But I think that was the most frustrating moment I've ever experienced in a retro game was my first experience, maybe my first 100 tries of Rat Race and Battletoads, because that game, oh my god, I love it though. It's my favorite game.
Yeah, I know. It's that Stockholm syndrome effect, because you have so much pain and suffering with the game, and then you beat it, and you're like, oh, I kind of love this game now.
A Dark Souls effect.
Yes,
no, absolutely. You know what though? It's easy now though. Like, and you fire it up, it's kind of you feel awesome when you fly through it.
Yeah, we are well practiced, absolutely.
But that level still gives me problems. So Rat Race is still my issue. Anyway, so this week, the game that is chosen was chosen by you.
Yes.
Mr. Seeky Wisdom. And it happens to be the first Sega Saturn game I've ever played. And we got plenty of time to play with it. And I, so let's just get into it. This week we're talking about Guardian Heroes mm-hmm. on the Sega Saturn system.
Yeah!
So I need to ask you, why Guardian Heroes?
It's actually a twofold answer. And so I'll start off with the most important part of the answer, which is, I actually was fortunate enough to have Sega Saturn growing up, and my brother and I spent hours playing this game. Not just the storyline campaign, which you got to experience, but the real gem behind the campaign, which we'll get into later, is the multiplayer aspect. So you can actually have 6 people brawling together in this game on local co-op and just having a good old time. And if you go through the effort of beating the game and unlocking all the characters, all those characters are at your disposal in the battle mode. And this is pre-Smash Brothers, by the way.
Right. You know, I'm going to bring that up later, too, that it's really interesting. It's Battle Royale mode, I guess you would call it, but not in the sense of Battle Royale types of games. But it's definitely Super Smash Brother-y.
Right.
And it's really cool how they allowed... I mean, I'm already kind of expressing my opinion on it, but it's really cool how in that mode they let you just kind of be like just regular old NPC enemies.
You know? Yeah, like the villagers.
Yeah, you can just be anybody in that mode. I think that's really cool. Like, I love when games do stuff like that. So you had a Sega Saturn growing up. I've never met anybody who legitimately had one as a part of their childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. We were very fortunate growing up. Our parents really kind of supported us playing video games. They were like, well, the kids could be running out the streets or they could be at home where we see them and playing video games. Video games win. So we had it and we had some pretty cool games. But I think this one and a Japanese only import fighting game, Dragon Ball fighting game, were the two that I remember playing on Saturn the most. And it's funny because the Japanese import is actually the follow-up, the second part of why I chose Guardian Heroes. Lately, I started watching this anime called, in English, it's called Uncle from Another World, or in Japanese, it's, what's Isekai Ojichan, which is basically like Old Man from Another World. And I don't want to give too much away because I think anybody who really likes retro games, especially like Sega retro, would really like this anime. But what's interesting is this guy, his whole mentality is all about like Sega Genesis games. And he makes reference to Guardian Heroes in that anime. And I was like, oh, yeah, Guardian Heroes. I haven't played that game in 20 years. And then this whole situation came up. I was like, you know what? Guardian Heroes is the game.
Wait a second. So in this anime, he actually is like a Sega Saturn fan, and he like
he's a Sega fan completely, from
that's
like
awesome
Sonic the Hedgehog all the way to Sega Saturn.
Well, you know, a part of playing this game, I also looked a little, I got to do some research on the Sega Saturn, mm-hmm. and realized that it outsold the N64 in Japan.
Oh wow,
I didn't know that. And also yeah. it sold really, really well in Japan, and it sold abysmally in the yeah. North America.
It didn't so make it over here.
I think that's probably, yeah, it's a reason why I didn't get a chance to play it, I assume, but
yeah. And the publisher, did you do research on the publisher themselves,
oh,
the people behind
yeah.
the game?
Okay,
oh, good. Yeah. We'll Treasure? Get into that when you're ready.
Yeah. Dude, when I found that out immediately in the beginning of playing it and spending my time with it, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Like, yep. Like that developer. Well, you know what? The other questions I have for you will mm-hmm. probably fit into later on in this episode. So let's start with I want to start with first impressions because I want to know what you felt like the first time you played this game. So let's do that.
Yeah, no problem. So probably the very first time I played this, it was probably it was late 90s. Saturn came out in 96 ish. It just reminded me of a lot of 2D games that I was already really enjoying, like Golden Axe and Final Fight, Streets of Rage. It's a side-scrolling beat-em-up. But what I had forgotten and recently remembered, and I know at the time I really would have appreciated, was it wasn't just a button-mashing side-scrolling beat-em-up, because there's actually like combos and special moves and magic, and you do more than just regular fighting games. So back then and now, revisiting it decades later, it gives you that sense of, wow, this is really like a game that I enjoy, but it has these weird other things that I also enjoy kind of mixed in.
Yeah, this game, you know, and this developer is known for kind of thinking outside the bun. And mm-hmm. they, you know, my first impressions of the video or the game was its intro video. I was really impressed with.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for full blown anime intros, kind of like Wild Arms charmed mm-hmm. me the same way. But this game not only does that in the beginning, but even when you enter the game, you know, it's got this really rich story that is crafted yeah. with these characters. And that was the first thing I really noticed. I was like, this is impressive. And then I literally went into it blind. Like I mm-hmm. just started playing Good. It and I'm like, what is this? This is like Streets of Rage meets like that do you remember that arcade AD&D game, the Dungeons and Dragons game?
Those are some of my favorite games, dude.
Yeah, like yeah, I immediately got those vibes and I was like, whoa, this exists? I didn't even know this game existed.
Yeah it has those vibes too. And the fact that like when you go through those games you make choices, and we'll get into that too, the game does the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was like, this is crazy that I've never heard of this, because I'm a person that I'm a big like hipster dork when it comes to hidden gems.
Yeah, but I mean that's your show.
I'm true. But I'm surprised that there are things out there that are of this unique, of this quality. And I don't think I've seen anything like this since, to be honest. Like it's a really it shot for the moon, you know. And mm-hmm. of course, like we stated earlier, Treasure was the developer or the publisher. Mm-hmm. And they're known for they're all ex Konami. I think it was Konami, right? They worked for Konami, and then they.
I don't know. I didn't know that they were ex Konami, but that's
yeah. Cool. I think the story there was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I believe they worked for Konami, and they were kind of like their A team, and then they were not agreeing with the decisions being made, and they all like quit and created Treasure.
Wow.
And
they,
so
they saw the writing on the wall with Konami decades early.
Well, I guess. Oh, this is before Metal Gear Solid 1 on the, you know, on PSX. So, but yeah, this game, I was like, oh, wow, this is really cool. You can, it's like a mash of, it also has some like Fatal Fury-ness to it where you can jump in between different planes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I had forgotten about that.
Yeah. And I was like, this is awesome. From the get go, I was very much charmed. I like the intro. The music is pretty.
The music slaps you in the face so fast. It's so
but
good.
But it's great. And it's high quality. And then you get like this. You choose your character from the get-go. There's a wide variety of. For a game of this type, I mean, having like six. I think it's six from the jump.
Four. Okay. Four that you can pick. And then when you beat the game once, you unlock a fifth.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know why I'm you can't play as the golden. Night, but
yeah, only but, in battle mode apparently.
But they're definitely a big part of this whole game because I think they're by your side the entire time. But
yeah, and that's another cool thing. Like as a person who like if you're you know single kid or you just don't have siblings who are interested or parents are interested, to be able to sit down and play a solo game and feel like you've got a buddy, a partner the whole time with you is pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know, let's just kind of jump right into gameplay because that's something I definitely want to talk about. This game is very approachable for anybody who I think of all, I don't know about all ages, but at least like young age to older age, because the fact that they give you this AI controlled partner right from the get go. And I was not able to play this game with another person because unfortunately the only way I could play this game was via an emulator, which actually took a lot of tinkering to figure out.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that initially.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Does the GoldenEye, do they follow you even if you're playing two players for campaign?
Like yes, story mode? He's just part of the story.
So it's like three people the whole time then, if you have a couch co-op going on. See, and that's really cool. And that AI of that character is really impressive.
Yeah, all considering that time, they're really smart. And the fact that, I don't know if you figured this out, but you can actually pick a menu and choose what his fighting style is. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a button. I mean... My button layout, I was using an Xbox 360 controller, but my Y button was the command button to give, you know, it opens up this little bubble that shows you like these visual cues of, and it's really funny because it's kind of cute. It shows like the golden undead knight guy, and then it shows your character, and it's like protect or go crazy.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I thought that was
or
like
do the super really explosion.
Cool. Yeah, do that crazy. That's what I meant by go crazy. Yeah, just like do your major power up. But I mean, the game, like the gameplay is interesting. And like I stated, this is like unlike anything I've played. And I'm surprised. I'm a little saddened that this franchise died on the vine. I did discover there's another way to play this game. It's an Xbox Live Arcade remake.
Yes. I want to talk about that, too.
But you better hurry on that because they're closing the Xbox Live Arcade in a year.
Oh, wow. And,
which is just going to make this expensive game even more expensive if you want to play it on the Saturn. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's cool. You have it's a beat 'em up.
Yes. At its heart, it's a beat 'em up.
It is. It's also an RPG. It's got stats that at the end of the when you complete the levels or I guess sections and chapters of the game. You can level up throughout the game by, you know, just beating the crap out of everything. And then it gives you these, there's like seven different stats, which is like your standard, you know, strength, agility, luck, intelligence, all that. And you put those into your stats. This is, of course, after you choose a character, you're given a Han, Nicole, Han, yep. Randy, Genjiro. Is it Genjiro?
I think it's Genjiro, yeah.
Okay, Kenshiro already knows that I pronounce anything like this incorrectly. And then is it Serena is the unlockable character?
That's right. The one who jumps into in the very beginning and says, don't use the sword.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, you got your undead gold warrior dude.
Mm-hmm.
But and then all the characters are different. They all play different. Yep. I did two playthroughs. One originally is Han, who is, I don't know why people want to say Han, but he's he's more of like the brute, the warrior, your standard warrior. And then I played it as Randy, who I really enjoyed because he's more agile and has like a, mm-hmm. you know, smaller and all that, but starts off a lot weaker. And it's crazy how your stats from the get-go are so different. Like, I found myself dying a lot quicker as Randy instead of Han. And then like later on.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like I started pumping all my points into health really quickly with Randy.
Yeah. Max out vitality.
Yeah. But
so it's interesting that you say that because I did the same thing. I played with Randy. I started with Han, of course, played with Randy. And then I also played with Nicole and I think it's Genjiro, right?
Yeah, Genjiro.
I kept getting better with each playthrough. So the very first time I played with Han, I'm like, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm a melee class, berserker, all that, enjoy. And I got wrecked. I mean, I was
really?
I think I was too close to the action. I just kept getting beat up.
That was the opposite for me.
Yeah, that's why I found it interesting. Whereas with Randy, because he had magic and he had range and he was so much faster, like when they got close to me, I could just tap and regain my magic and then throw spells at them. So I actually did better with Randy on my second playthrough.
Those combos feel so good when you it's really cool. Man. The game has combos. This is a game that 1996 me would have adored because I was obsessed with combos. I was a Killer Instinct over Mortal Kombat kid at one point.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I loved Killer Instinct on Super Nintendo and N64.
Oh, my God. I have such a funny story about Killer Instinct on Super Nintendo. I'm going to leave that I had an idea to do a bonus episode on, like, most embarrassing, like, video game
good.
Memories. And I definitely have a Blockbuster Video Killer Instinct memory that's really cringe. But
Can't wait.
But this game had everything I wanted back then. Like I liked beat 'em ups. This game kind of blends like a fighting game with kind of a Turtles in Time-esque side scrolling beat 'em up. It's like it has depth, it has story, it has like vibrant characters. There's RPG elements where there's a story going on, and unfortunately there's unskippable cutscenes. That sometimes kind of drag a little bit. There's one section of the game right around the midpoint where I'm like, okay, 5 minute cutscene. It's
that story of Canon telling you like the history of the world and why you should join forces with him and all that.
It's cool the first time, but this game has like replay value. It expects you to replay it over and over, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's actually the intention because there's 30 stages.
Yeah, and there's different. We didn't even talk about this. There's branching ways to get to the end.
Yeah, every choice you make actually matters. There's all these dialogue choices, and whatever choice you do influences what stage you go to, which influences one of the, I think, the 7 possible endings.
Yeah. And also there's morality choices, too, that you can do throughout the game that aren't even a part of those multiple choice, but those sections where, like, if you're just beating up an enemy that's already dead. Because once you kill an enemy, you can just beat on its corpse until it disappears.
Yeah, I love juggling them.
Juggling it, yeah. Even doing that kind of will decide your ending. I didn't know that.
Oh, that I did not know.
Yeah, there's like a morality. There's like a hidden morality. I guess
kind of like an Undertale.
Yeah.
Oh snap!
But it's really cool that like the game demands a replay through because of this. There's so many branching ways, and there's 30 levels, but you're not going to play through every single level in any of the playthroughs. You might
play through 6 to 10 maybe each.
But it's cool they did that. I think that's amazing. This game really shot for the moon. You could tell this is a labor of love. So we had this idea. They're like, well, we're restricted by it's going to be 2D, and at this time 2D wasn't the thing.
Yeah, you know? 3D was so big.
And right now it was almost like shooting yourself in the foot to even try to like create a 2D game around this time period, and they tried to. I think they were like Treasure, the team that developed this, was what they were trying to like upgrade 2D games to like the next level. And you see that in Mischief Makers on the N64, which also they made.
So, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, another 2D game that's a huge hidden gem is out there and really good. And so, wow. I mean, there need to, I don't, this will never happen, but I would love to see a like treasure best of collection. You know how they did like the Cowabunga collection or like mm-hmm. the Castlevania collection, just treasure games, because they're quality has always maintained in all their games, even if the game might be too weird for some people, but it always had charm. This game is a great presentation of this company, like, especially since it's a Sega Saturn exclusive up until, you know, the Xbox release.
Yeah, and that Xbox release, I think it does a good job of preserving the original game while adding the quality of life improvements like skipping the cutscenes.
See, I didn't get a chance to play it, so I know nothing of the remake other than it exists. And by remake, I mean a remaster or
whatever. And we can talk about that too, because I'm glad you told me about that Xbox Live Arcade, but just in case, because I know these digital e-stores from back in the day keep shutting down, no thanks to you, Nintendo. I actually bought the game already, because it's only $5. And if you have Game Pass, it's on Game Pass until it goes away. But I mean, I'd rather just buy it for $5 and associate it with my profile.
Yeah, no, and absolutely, because then you practically have it forever. It's going to be so sad. That's going to happen next. Everybody listening to this, next year, around this time, they are closing the Xbox 360 Live Arcade. So anything you don't have that isn't available on the current, like it is backwards compatible with Xbox mm-hmm. One, is going to be gone forever.
Yeah.
That is sad, including certain 360 games that never made it to re-release on the Xbox Live One X and everything. Or, you know, there's like exclusive games that we're going into another chapter of games being gone forever. Yeah. And it's really sad because those aren't easy to emulate at the moment.
But, yeah, and that's the beauty of emulation, is we can preserve those gaming experiences even when the companies don't. But the problem with more modern stuff is emulating those can be more taxing on resources.
Right. And also you have legal teams that are like, no, you know, like Nintendo is like, we don't care. Like, it's our thing. It's ours to kill or not, you know, and I'm like, that's not cool. But
yeah, that's not cool.
I mean, that's my stance on emulation. To me, it's like, if the game's available to purchase currently, mm-hmm, and not in a sense of like you paying $200 on eBay.
Nobody should be subjugated to that. That's if you're a collector.
Right. And if it's reasonable, you know, then it's fine. Don't emulate it. But if it's not, and it's everything else that I stated, then by all means, how else are you going to play it? You know, and this game is still available. So like highly, you said it's $5?
$5. It's so worth it.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm going to grab it. So
yeah, I didn't know it was still available because my brother had told me, and my brother has a whole bunch of comments, and he actually played this game last week at my request in preparation for this. And I watched him do a playthrough after I had played and just watched his expertise because I was struggling. And you kept saying this is like a unique game that's kind of like a shot for the moon. His word was, it was very experimental. Like, And for me, what it did is it encapsulated four genres that I've never seen put together in a single game, which was beat 'em up, side-scrolling beat 'em up, as we talked about, fighting game, which has special moves and combos. It has RPG elements to it with the stat building. And I also today, just before this, I was thinking about, you know what? It's also a roguelike because you start over and you make different choices and you get different outcomes.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's also... It aged well. You know, we're gonna talk about graphics and audio soon, but this game aged incredibly, and it's I'm surprised. This is the thing though about Treasure. Every time I come across their games, I've never heard of the game, and I'm always impressed.
I've never heard of it, but it's awesome.
Yeah, and I kind of wish that Treasure bought out Konami and like they were running the show right now. Can you imagine?
Life would be so good.
They could have saved the Dreamcast, but this game, I digress. So this game, you know, addition to, like you were stating, in addition to the story mode, it has a versus mode where it had up to six players that can compete using any of the main characters and also unlockable like monsters, bosses, civilians, and a time battle to the death, which is like also for its time was new because Smash Brothers wasn't out yet when this came out. That's revolutionary, and you know, I don't think this game did well obviously in the States, but It did do well in Japan, and I'm surprised that they're not like, of all, this is a time when Sega was like, hey, Nintendo, did you kind of like almost rip us off with this Smash Brothers thing? Like, because that Battle Royale is like very, I didn't have a chance to experience it, but I did look up some play of it, and mm-hmm. I thought like, well, this is very, very like Power Stone was very, yeah. Very Smash Brothers-esque.
Yeah.
Except, you know,
with utter chaos, beautiful yeah. chaos.
And the game is too, as you play through it, it allows an impressive amount of sprites on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is where the Sega Saturn apparently shined, was in 2D processing. This game screams arcade to me.
Yeah. I mean, it has that arcade vibe because you basically get 9 quarters
right
at the beginning. And that's like your continues. And that's it. Once you're done, you're done. And it has that arcade vibe because it's like, oh, we want you to succeed, but this is your finite amount. It's like you only get so much money to play, and then that's it. So you have to get better each time you start over.
Also, if you went to the options menu, it had like dip switches and stuff. And mm-hmm. I've never seen that in a console game because those are specifically like arcade. For arcade, like PCBs. So like, yep. I was like, was this supposed to be an arcade game originally? And they were able to port it to a Saturn?
To a Saturn, yeah.
Because that's like, weird to see that.
Yeah, you might be right, because they're kind of like, you know what? Arcades are kind of dead. Like, let's focus on the home console, although we like this vibe.
I'd put money on that this was originally going to be an arcade game. And they were like, no, let's put it on a console, because now we have a console that can actually
do it.
Replicate.
Do it the way it's supposed to be.
Replicate arcades.
Isn't this around the same time when the Neo Geo home console was out? I mean, I know that was big in the States.
No, but it was. And this game actually kind of gave me Neo Geo vibes for sure. With like the scaling sprites, mm-hmm. the colorfulness and like the just the chaos on screen. Because there's times when it slows down, but it's like, welcome to slowdown.
Yeah, it's like the it's a slowdown, but it doesn't really take away from the action or make you feel like, oh god, this game is lagging. It's just like, oh, thank god, now I can block, and then you attack.
Actually, yes, it was beneficiary, like, or it was beneficial to have to like breathe sometimes. I'm like, I need to jump all the way in the back plane and chill for a second and block and maybe like throw a spell out, because this is mm-hmm. too nuts. It does get crazy. And you know what else? It reminded me of another game that I really like that's also kind of a considered a hidden gem, and it's a Beautiful Joe on the...
Oh, yes, yes.
It gave I'm me those vibes. That's a great game, too. And this game gave me Beautiful Joe vibes as well, which is unique and a side-scrolling beat-em-up that also tries to have combos and a little bit of an RPG element.
Yeah, and it's like high action sequences, and I kind of feel like there are certain times, especially when you get into a good groove, where it's just like high action on the screen.
Right. Oh, it's crazy. And then you a lot of times you think you're done with the level, and you're not.
It's like, oh, more enemies.
Oh, and even like, yeah, they're like, enemies. Oh, here comes a bunch of like gigantic enemies, because the sprites are impressive. Like, there are enormous sprites in this game.
Yeah, some of the bosses especially are like almost, you know, half the screen or almost to the top of the screen.
And also, well, let's get into that then. I feel like we're already going into graphics and audio. So let's talk about graphics and audio. This game, gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Yes. Yes.
This is the first Sega Saturn game I've ever played, and I feel like I've played one of the best
already. Yeah.
It's great.
Absolutely.
This makes me want to play other Sega Saturn games. Like, I'm impressed out of my mind. And there was, I literally know nothing about the Saturn other than it existed and it didn't do well in the States. But a lot of people say that it was a powerhouse for 2D games.
It really, you can see it on the screen.
Yeah. And arcade ports. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I don't recall too many arcade ports offhand. I think the Die Hard arcade is on the Saturn, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was called Dynamite Cop eventually on... they renamed it for the Dreamcast, but also made it to the Dreamcast later on.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so like I said, I don't really remember... The games I remember on Saturn were this one, obviously, that Dragon Ball game that I mentioned, which is a Japanese-only import, and then Panzer Dragoon, which you can get on Steam, the remake. But those are really the only... And then Knights, okay?
Yeah, Knights. I'm aware of those ones.
those are the only games on Saturn that like come back. Like, oh yeah, Saturn. Like, I feel like there's fighting games, like maybe Virtua Fighter or something was on there. Like, I'm sure they had iterations on different consoles, but those are really the only Saturn games that just like immediately spring to mind.
I wonder, I think there was a Marvel versus Capcom or some one of those games that made it to the Saturn as well, but I'm not sure.
Marvel versus Capcom 1 and 2 were definitely on Dreamcast.
Yeah, but I think it was Saturn. Children of the Atom or something. It was like
prior. Okay, oh, maybe it was Street Fighter versus X-Men.
I think you're
which
right.
Which is right before Marvel versus Capcom.
Yep. All those games are great also, by the way.
Yeah, but they're fantastic fighting games.
So this game, though, I have to give it credit and graphics department because, like I stated earlier, it holds up. Sprites just hold up. It's so funny and it's so ironic that now in the 2020s that we're at now, that of all the games that age good well, it was the ones that people were giving up on, which was 2D sprite based games.
2D pixels. Yep.
Yeah. You think about it because it scales really well. You know, you can play these games on 4K TV if you have the chance to, and it looks fantastic. I'm constantly revisiting PS1 and N64 games recently, and I'm like, oh my good lord, these are rough. But this game was released around the same time as the PlayStation. So
yep, Saturn and PlayStation were direct competitors.
Saturn looks like it blew the PlayStation out of the water.
Yeah, but, well, it just we didn't get that here in the U.S. It's just it wasn't. I mean, Sega always kind of struggled against Nintendo, but with the Sony hitting the market, I just didn't think they had the foothold that they needed here to be successful.
It seems like they aimed at taking the North American market is why. I think they pumped all of their marketing into that, whereas Sega already had a grip because Sony was new to the game. So Sony had to acquire a fan base in Japan and North America at the same time. And it looks like they just aimed at North America to be their primary. But of course, you know, Japan, they're Japan company. That's my personal opinion, but I don't know if it's true. But go ahead.
No, I think the North American market has always been key just because they know that there's the sheer numbers, right? Like arcades were always big here. And then Nintendo saw that way early on, even right after the video game crash, Nintendo's like, we need the U.S. market. You know how that whole story unfolds. Sega, as aggressive as they were and as much as they did a great job with like shipping Sonic with the game for free, which was highly contested, and then the whole blast processing fake marketing campaign, it still shot things up. The fact that they weren't super kid friendly, they were catering to more adult audiences and teenagers, like with violence and gore, like they did all the things right, but history has a different story.
Do you think the blast processing them using that marketing led to the bit wars where it's like, oh yeah, well 16 bit, oh well 32, oh well 64. Do you think that led to that whole idea?
It's definitely a piece of the puzzle, right? Because people don't understand what 16 bit or 32 bit is. But if you tell them like, hey, this number is higher, and that higher number means look at how good the game looks. I mean, anybody can understand that, right? So it's definitely all marketing.
It was consumer, like simplifying it for consumers, being like, no, this has a Hemi engine in it. You're like, a Hemi engine, but they don't know what a Hemi engine is, you know?
Right. Or they don't know how much horsepower or torque or anything. It's just like, oh, Hemi.
Which is cool though, because I mean, like what comes with, that's the beauty of competition. That's why I always want there to always be a battle, is because it brings innovation and it also brings, you know, affordability. And it's weird the Saturn never crossed paths with me, because I was like, I've stated before, I was a big Sega kid too. And I had a Sega CD, which was
another super rare console, really.
I didn't know anybody who had one. And the whole reason I had one is because I had like GamePro at a young age subscription.
GamePro is great.
Another system that did not age well at all, but has a huge place in my heart. I'm surprised I didn't go with a Saturn. I literally went from like Sega CD to Dreamcast.
And there's interesting
this area here of PlayStation 1 took up that Saturn probably would have taken. Let me ask you real quick, do you still have that Saturn?
I do not.
Many
years ago, I had the Saturn and the game, and many years ago when I relocated to the East Coast, my brother was in care of everything, and he felt like whatever he wanted to keep, he kept, and he sold the rest, and he got good coin for it. And this was before things exploded.
You're right.
And I actually, in preparation for this, I asked my local retro shop what a Saturn would go for, and they were like $150. I'm like, well, that's not too bad, but getting Guardian Heroes is going to be a challenge.
Another $100, yeah, easily.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I was like, you know what? Like, it's worth it, but it's also kind of not, because that's really the only game I'm going to play like regularly, and I'd rather spend $5 on the Xbox version and call it a day.
See, that's the thing, is if it didn't exist, and like you said, a better quality of life version on a more accessible system and a cheaper price, then yeah, it's probably worth going after it, because this is a big part of your like your upbringing and your video game history.
But if the only way to play was on a Saturn with the game, then let's make it happen. But thankfully we do have some alternatives, at least for now.
For now, yeah. I wonder if there's a physical copy. I don't think that exists, but Xbox Live Arcade didn't have a lot of physical copies other than like compilations. But I digress. Once again, the sprites reminded me, the artwork, especially when the characters are having like kind of their cutscenes. You know what it reminded me of? Trigun. Like the art reminded me of Trigun. The very like sharp faces, you know, and kind of like pointy hair. And
yeah, it's a stylized kind of anime look, but it's like an older 90s anime look.
Which I love that show. That's one of my favorite, like, because as everybody else who wasn't interjected to anime naturally, of course, Adult Swim was my entry
Adult level. Swim was great.
Yeah, so like Trigun is a big, I love Trigun. And this game reminded me like the art style, very Trigun-esque. So,
curious tangent, did you watch the new Trigun?
I did not. I have not.
Okay. I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard people who are fans of the series both love it and not like it for different reasons. So I'd be interested to see what your take is.
You know, I feel like I'd have to watch the series first again to make sure the original. Just to make sure, like the original 24 episodes, just to make sure that I still have that same love. I mean, I do love that show, and I think it's great.
I challenge you to do it in reverse. Like, rather than go back and set that expectation of like, okay, the new series should be like the old, because you've kind of forgotten, you know, it's like you're kind of rusty on it. Like, just jump right into the new one and see what you think, and then go back and compare it to the old one after, because I think it's going to give the new series a more fair and balanced assessment, because you're kind of coming in fresh, just like you did with this game.
You know what? I'm going to do that, and I will update you. Down the road. Yeah, because I know it's accessible, so I'm gonna do that. That's a great way to do it. So also, maybe I can watch my kids get them into it, you know. I'm sure.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sure one of these kids are gonna like anime. But
absolutely, it's impossible not to. Like, anime has become part of the regular media culture at this point.
Yeah,
like in the 90s it was so niche, and it's like, oh, you're an otaku, you like anime, you're so weird. But now it's like everybody loves anime.
Absolutely, and it's come a long way. And it's
The anime vibe in this game is really there. Like, it doesn't try to pretend that it's an anime, but you kind of feel like it's an interactive anime game that's also a fighting game, that's also, you know, a beat 'em up, that's also an RPG. It's just crazy.
Even though it's heavy-handed, the world building is great. Like, they definitely wanted to tell this story and make sure you knew it. And this is a new story as far as I know. I don't think this existed in a manga or like on as a book and literature. I don't know anything. I could be wrong.
I think it's a unique story. Yeah, I think you're right.
And that's a tall order. Like, this entire game is such a tall order for a company. And of course it's going to be somebody like Treasure that's going to come along and be like, yeah, let's do it. Let's make this happen. Yep. And outside of that, let's talk about the music. Because the music in this game is also very unique, but it works, and it's you know what it reminded me immediately of? Marvel versus Capcom 2. Because
you are so right.
Yeah, because that game has this like jazzy, upbeat, kind of high energy soundtrack that you wouldn't think would work, but does. And I immediately got those vibes, because I'm like, the music in this game is fantastic. I'm not even a fan of jazz, and I'm like, I'm impressed with this.
You sound almost spot on like a YouTuber video I was watching today. Because I was like, let me see what some other people had about, you know, their kind of commentary and reviews on the show. And one guy said the exact same thing. He goes, I don't like jazz music. You'll never catch me listening to jazz music. But there's something about this soundtrack that just hits so right.
Well, whatever the name of that kind of jazz is, I'm into that. I don't know what to call it. I just call it Marvel vs. Capcom 2
Jazz.
Yeah, because there's like saxophones. Yeah, yep. Like you're just playing this game and you're having this crazy battles and there's this intense fight going on. And all of a sudden there's like a saxophone solo that's just going on behind you. And some of the tracks were great. Like specifically a track was called it's called Open Your Heart.
Yep. That's one of the three I wrote down.
Yeah. Fantastic. Like I'm so impressed, which they checked all the boxes when they made this game. Right, but they knew they weren't going to capture some people because this is a genre game. This is a side-scrolling 2D. It's multiple genres mashed together. Mm-hmm. But if you're just not a fan of that type of game, you probably aren't going to like it, right? But I would challenge anybody to at least try it because it's
absolutely
so charming. It's so well made. Of course, it's just hard. The difficulties I had with the controls, setting up the controls for this, I'm emulating it, so it's like obviously I can't knock it for that. I'm not using a Sega. I've never even seen a Sega Saturn controller, so I don't even know if
it looks just like the 6-button Sega Genesis controller.
Oh, okay.
It also has the 6 buttons on the front, the start button in the middle, and then it has 2 shoulder pads.
See, I was going to say I have a USB 6-button Sega controller that I would have used, but. You're missing the shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you said the mode button, so that would suck.
So, I have one of these classic 360 fighting game controllers.
Oh.
And so it's exactly that. It's 6 buttons in the front and the shoulder pads, and it's got this nice clicky analog stick. So this is perfect for that game.
Where did you get that? That thing looks awesome.
It's an Xbox 360 versus fighting pad. It's made by PDP. I just bought it on Amazon. I think they're like $20.
I didn't even know that existed.
And this is perfect because it's Xbox 360 compliant. You can plug it right into a Raspberry Pi. You can plug it right into your Mister. You can plug it into any PC, Mac. It doesn't matter. It's just going to work.
It's so if you want, I'll send you the
Amazon link later. Yeah, it's a nice, comfortable, fun controller.
Yeah, that's cool. Wow. Good to know.
But yeah, with the music, I think, you know, with the graphics, like you said, that Treasure knows their 2D art, and you know they've done Gunstar Heroes, is one of my favorites from the Sega Genesis. So imagine that kind of like really rock solid 16-bit high-end graphic performance, upscale it so that the sprites can be bigger and more detailed and more fluid with more animations to that 32-bit era, and then couple that with full Redbook CD quality audio soundtrack that is just mastered perfectly. And that's the kind of experience you get. So like, this is the 2D era game that you would have wanted, like on the Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis. We just got it on the Saturn. It's like, this is what we were desperate
for. You got it 32-bit. Like literally it was an evolution of those games, but with better processing power and better hardware. And it's gorgeous. It's fast. It does have
so fast.
It has some downsides though. Like the game is not easy. Like I know it gives you 9. Well, not for me, but I don't know if that's
it's not. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, there's some those bosses. I mean, there's a point where you can get just absolutely jumped, where you can't do anything. You're getting juggled or frozen and beat up. There are some boss battles where you're like, wow, I need to keep my distance. And the fact they give you 9 continues to start with, at first I was like, that seems like a lot. Then near the end of my play with this game, I was like, that seems like a perfect amount.
Yeah.
Because
it's hard. Just enough to make it so that you can't run through and beat it your first time. You're going to have to repeat.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of this indicator of like, okay, I need to really practice and get good and learn some of these moves, or I'm never going to be able to get through this game. So I played it with every character except Serena. And what I found is I played it on the Saturn with all the characters and I could not beat the game. I mean, not on the Saturn, but you know, through emulation, I could not beat the game.
It's hard. Especially when you get past it, when you start getting into those sky levels near the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whenever you're taking on either sets of the spirits, whether you decide to fight the earth spirits or the sky spirits.
Yeah, I went with the sky spirits.
Speaking of which, I want to talk about storyline with that, but we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
The those levels and those monsters are just brutal, just absolutely brutal. And I felt like, this is why I said with Han, I felt like I was too close to the action. Like, no matter how much damage I could do, I was just getting wrecked. And this is not the case when I actually played one whole time with Han. This was my fifth playthrough with on the 360 or Xbox One on the arcade version. That one, I felt like maybe because the controls were wound just a little bit tighter for that controller, or maybe just because I had practiced enough that I finally got good, I was actually able to beat it on the 360.
Really? Well,
yep.
I too fell victim to I gave it four tries and I found myself dying around that I believe is the end game.
Yeah, it depends area. On your choices. Yeah.
I kind of followed the same choices because I was like kind of invested. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know what the other route is. And now that I like the game, I'm like, well, I'm going to go see what's up with that later. But I kept trying to complete the timeline of your fighting, like the sky spirits. Mm-hmm. And after you defeat Cannon and all this, I know this all probably sounds crazy to people listening, but it's all part of it. Storyline. The game, one of the issues I had a little bit near the end of the game is that you get really, I guess I'll just call them bullet sponges. Like these enemies, their life bars are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you, this is a game that actually is really interesting because not in any other beat 'em up I've ever played have I experienced a situation where I can actually just kind of chill and jump back and let the other AI comrade kind of take things over while I strategize.
It's impressive that you can do that.
It's cool. I like that because the game's fair. It's very difficult near the end, though. It's weird because it ramps up very quickly, but I think the pacing is fine. Like it starts off like you're just destroying. Actually, it starts off really hard, and then you come across this undead warrior, and then you realize that he can be a part of your crew and he takes your commands. And then once you have that, you're like, okay, well, now I have this rest of the game, and it seems easy at first, but oh my god, it gets hard. And also, I don't know if this is I'm not sure if I call this a problem, but I found myself having to pause and blink because I was like, my eyeballs were poking out of my head, and I'm like, so like my fingers are hurting because I'm just like fighting and staring, and I'm like, whoa, I need to take a break, like pause the game and just stand up and breathe for a second because it's very intense and very fast paced.
Yeah. Maybe it was just because of the nature of how I was playing. Like I would play and then just take a break naturally because I would go and do something and come back.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that fatigue. I don't think I sat and played for an hour straight because it takes about an hour to go through a campaign. Like, you know, depending on your decisions and the difficulty and how you play, you can basically get through an entire campaign in an hour. But I think I took breaks here and there just because.
Yeah, well, good on you because I'm the kind of person that is I have very limited time in my life, being a father and, you know, like working and everything. But this game, I was like, oh, man, I was like, oh, yeah, let's go see what's next. But then I realized my eyes were dry and like I'm staring really hard. I'm not blinking. I'm like, oh my god. But it's great though. Like I was engrossed in the game. And
yeah, which is great.
To me, that tells me it's a fantastic game. And it's so interesting. It's such a different game. And I'm surprised I've never heard of it until you came across and were like, let's talk about this game.
Yeah, I'm so glad that, you know, that your experience was not only a positive one, but that you keep going back to that. It's like, I can't believe I'd never heard of this even, like, let alone played it, but just never heard of it. And now coming into it, you're just like, wow, what an amazing game.
Well, it's beautiful. That's the beautiful thing about retro gaming, I think, is that that is going to happen. If you're into this hobby, if you're into playing older games or like discovering older games, because frankly, I'm not a big fan of new games and I don't have the income to buy the newest systems or constantly play the newest games. Like it's an every once in a while thing. And of course I'm a child of the 80s. So these things are, I want to go back and play these things that I may have missed. And this game is a perfect example of something that I think a lot of people, if you're into retro gaming, you definitely have to play.
Yeah, definitely agree.
And it's the replay value is amazing. It's built into it. It's got co-op that seems like super fun. It has a battle royale mode, not in the sense of PUBG, but in the sense of like sit around your couch battle royale, I guess.
like Smash Brothers, the way it was intended.
Right. And it's a charming game. It's made with love. So I think I'm just ready to go in a verdict, to be honest.
Yeah, go for it.
I think this game is there's been a lot of games on this show that I say are the epitome of hidden gem. But as of right now, I think Guardian Heroes takes the crown of hidden gem. Like it is. There's no other game I've experienced that is it more hidden gem than this game. It's however, it's not for everybody. And it is there. Yeah. It does get a little repetitious. You have to be into beat 'em ups. I feel like beat 'em ups and shoot 'em ups are these are different genres that have people that either love them or hate them. Or like people will dip their toes into these genres occasionally. I feel like if you're a fan of anime whatsoever, I think people will like it. If you're a fan of beat 'em ups, 100%, this is up there. This is on the Mount Rushmore of beat 'em ups. And I didn't even know this game existed till 2 weeks ago. It's so well crafted. Obviously, it's created by a high quality company in Treasure who has never, so far, I've not been disappointed by. You spoke earlier about Gunstar Heroes. That game is one of my favorite Genesis games of all time.
Yeah.
And they also made for sure. Alien Soldier too, which a lot of people I don't think have played. It's also on the Genesis.
I have not played that one.
Oh, dude.
I'll have to check that one out.
You have to. You have to play that. But I give this game an A for sure. I think that I'm so charmed by it. I think it's beautiful. The music is dope. Its only hindrance is the fact that a lot of people don't know about it, and I'm kind of sad. I did hear that there was some kind of spiritual successor to this game. But
yes. So there's an actual sequel, which was Gunstar Heroes Advanced on Game Boy Advance, which was not as good. It did not have the charm. It did not have the hardware behind it. And it's kind of got like these platforming elements to it, too. If you're like an uber fan of like Treasure, you want to check it out, go for it. But in terms of if you just want like more of this action, it's not the same.
Also, what's with Treasure adding heroes to like a lot of their titles? I guess it works. But yeah, for sure. I recommend this. It's available on the Xbox Live Arcade. I highly, if it's $5, if it's $10, it's worth that. And just add it because it's not going to be there next year. More than likely. I don't know. But I do know that we're coming to as of the recording of this episode, we're coming to a new unfortunate time period where we're about to lose a lot of games, and this might be one of them. So grab it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Seeky Wisdom, let me hear your ultimate feelings, if you were to sum it up, about Guardian
Heroes. Absolutely. I just looked at my notes here again. The spiritual success that you're talking about is on 3DS called Code of Princess.
Yes, that's what it is. I've heard about that.
Yep. So that would be probably the closest in terms of gameplay overall. For me, and my brother would echo me on this because he and I talked about this prior to the show. The game is amazing by far. It's experimental, as he said. For me, it's this amazing mashup of a multiple set of genres that I didn't think would go well together, but in this game it absolutely does. It covers all the bases in terms of great art, amazing music, fun gameplay, high action, and it's really just kind of one of the pinnacles of what retro gaming is and why we love it so much. And I think this is a type of game that if it had better marketing, a lot of people would be referencing this just same way they referenced Castlevania Symphony of the Night, who did the same thing.
Absolutely.
They created a masterpiece 2D game when the 3D era was trying to take over video games. And these guys did the same thing. It just didn't get the same market share, at least in the US. In Japan, it kind of did. For me, I absolutely am just thrilled to hear that you find it a hidden gem. You'd give it an A status. Not just because the game has a personal connection with me, because I did play it growing up, but also just because it's one of those games that I think people should visit and just experience what an amazing, you know, 2D retro game could be, which is the kind of experience that we're hungry for with these new retro inspired games that have the same type of pixel art, but with a fully orchestrated, amazing, intense soundtracks. Like, this is a game from that era that has all the modern qualities that we enjoy. And play it on the Xbox 360. Don't even worry about the emulator, because you get the quality of life improvements, like being able to skip cutscenes when you're doing replays. You get multiplayer co-op and battle mode right over the internet. So if you don't have couch co-op set up, it doesn't matter. Play with your friends online. I didn't know that. Yes, sir. Oh, we can play anytime you want.
Oh, that's even better.
And despite some of the jank, like, it's not a perfect game by any means, but it's the little caveats that it does have, the little things that may take away slightly from the experience, I think are far outshined by just the brilliance and the complexity and just, most importantly, the fun of this game.
You know, I challenge anybody who doesn't know about this game or has never played it to play it for an hour and tell me, do my face, that this is a bad game.
Yeah.
You know, other than the only excuse I could hear is I'm just not into these kind of games. Because this is a well-crafted game from a prestigious developer. And I think that I thank you very much for bringing this into my world. And I'm going to definitely buy it today.
Nice.
Make sure I have this. So that there you have it, everybody. Guardian Heroes on the Sega Saturn gets some of our highest regards on the show so far. So this being a special guest episode, you, my friend, get to choose the next game from the Wheel of Retro.
All right. So I'm ready to spin that wheel.
Yeah. So please be kind. It's randomly chosen. I sent him the same wheel I use.
Yeah. And all right. We're ready to spin.
Let's go. Okay.
Good luck. It was so close to one that I would have rather got, but that's life.
Oh no.
Nothing against this game. I'm just not as familiar with it. You probably are more familiar. Here's the screenshot.
Okay. Oh no. Seek. What have you done?
I wanted the one right above it in
You're
red.
You're never coming on the show again. No, I'm kidding.
thank you.
Okay. So, oh God, dude. So next week, this week we're going to be playing a PlayStation 1 game, 3D platformer, sequel to a Super Nintendo and Genesis game, starring a cat by the name of Bubsy. Next week we're playing Bubsy 3D and reviewing it on Super Garbage Day. Good Lord, this is considered one of the worst games ever made. Do you realize this, Seek?
So did somebody submit this via Patreon?
Oh yeah. These are all Patreon picks.
Please blame that person in addition to me.
Oh, I know who it is. I believe this is Kenshiro. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, naturally.
Bubs, join me next week as I, oh good Lord. Thank you so much, Seek. I want you to let everybody know how to find you. I know you stream, so the floor is yours. Tell everybody what you do and how to find you.
Well, thank you. Yes, you can just find me on most social platforms, Seek Ye Wisdom. I do stream, but I'm not in it for the money. I just have fun, so I don't have a regular schedule. But I just enjoy playing anything from retro NES hard challenges all the way up to Dark Souls and just having a good time. You know, it's a nice chill time to just relax and enjoy video games, and that's what I'm about. So most importantly, I want to advertise the Super Garbage Day Discord, because that's where we all hang out. And I'm part of a lot of other Discords as well, like our Retrosexual Discords, which you have joined. We do monthly challenges. So it's always good to have something to strive for, something to work on, and a community that is kind of participating in those challenges with you, because I think that's how we all grow and learn from each other. So it's been a pleasure and an honor being here. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I couldn't have had a better game and a better opportunity to be a part of your show. So thank you.
Beautiful. I it's fantastic. Thank you so much. And also, thank you for having lunch with me that one time and us eating hot wings.
Oh, dude, that was amazing. I'm so glad that worked out. Like,
yeah,
it took the car breaking down for that to happen, but it was a worthwhile benefit for that situation.
You know, fun fact, everybody listening. Me and Seek hung out in person because his car broke down in the city I live in as him and his friends were passing through. And It was an opportunity for us to sit down, eat some wings and talk. And it was awesome.
Delicious wings, by the way.
Yeah. Hot Mama. Shout out to Hot Mamas, Eugene.
Hot Mamas, yo.
Get the little wings. So thank you, Seek. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you.
And
Ross.
And we will see you next week. We're going to cut to B. Bye.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye.